Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday, January 28th, the middle of the week.
Yep, hump day.
Hump day it is. I used to have somebody reminding me this every day or every Wednesday. In fact, it was one of the former co-hosts, so then I consciously had to ask her, please don't bring it up anymore, you know? People are tired of talking about the same thing. Hump day here and hump day there, yeah. You know?
I mean, Wednesday is probably going to be called that.
Yeah.
But not to me.
How are you doing, Jen?
I am doing well. How are you?
Yeah, are you enjoying the day?
I am.
So far?
So far, it's been good. It's only 9:59.
It is. But
not a lot has happened yet.
No, not yet. Well, it has in other places, but...
Yes, that's true.
Right? I mean, you get up in the morning and a whole world opens up to you, a whole new world. Like, what happened today? You know, you go into CNN's big headline, whatever it screams that day.
Yep.
You know, and that's how the day starts, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's like you sleep for, you know, I mean, I sleep for like 8 hours. So a lot can happen in those 8 hours.
Right, exactly. Then you get up in the morning and you check your bank account
and
you get depressed. You know?
I don't
this
know
what happens to me.
I don't know that anything happened overnight with my finances, but I know that there's a lot of snow in some parts of the country. And
yeah.
I'm still waiting to hear if my hairstylist has gotten back in town. And
oh, wow. The problems you have, I'm telling
it's
you.
It's true.
With your hairstylist. So you're just pretty much going to one, right? You have one that you prefer?
Yeah.
You wouldn't go to anybody else?
Well, you become loyal. You become friends on like social media. So if you were to even dare go to somebody else, they see it.
I know.
I would never cheat. Actually, once I cheated on my hair, the person that cuts my hair, not the person that colors, two different people.
Right.
I cheated on her with somebody that did my hair for free, a friend of the family.
Really?
And so I had to text her and be like, okay, I know you're going to see pictures of how short I cut my hair. And I want you to know it's not because I don't love you. It's because I got my hair cut for free by a family friend. So I had to tell you first before you saw it.
Well, that's nice. That
She's like, I totally get it. Thank you for telling me.
Yeah. Well, a thoughtful customer you are.
Thanks. I try.
Well, in a few minutes, we're going to get to our guest. We have a very special guest in the studio. And I'm looking forward to the interview. Just a couple things, Jen, going on in the news. I thought this was kind of interesting. This actor arrested on voyeurism in Canada. Have you heard of this?
No.
Yeah, he's an American actor, but he's working in Canada, and he rented out his condo to two women in their mid-20s, and I guess they discovered hidden cameras and video equipment connected to the internet inside their apartment.
What?
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, you know, I mean, how do you start like going back and recreating everything that you may have done that he may have seen? And you go, my God, I mean, is there a bigger invasion than that?
Right.
You know?
I mean, this guy.
It'd be like right inside your underwear. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like see everything that you do.
What has he been in? Let's see.
A lot of small parts, they're saying, in Canada and stuff, but he's not famous or anything. Or, you know, at least not that we know of. I never heard of him, you know.
Hmm.
His name is Jean-Paul Menou. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy, man.
That is crazy.
So he was actually arrested, and wow.
How did they discover the cameras, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, you're in your apartment and stuff. You start... You know, seeing maybe there's a hole here, a little peephole there.
That is so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, to put the equipment there is crazy. You know, I mean, you may maybe put like one hidden camera or two, but apparently there's a whole video equipment there. So
jeez.
I don't know what's going on there.
I understand like security cameras. Like if you're going to rent out your place, you want to make sure people aren't stealing things in like the main rooms because they'd have to probably walk through there to get to the door to like, leave with your stuff. But like not the bedrooms, not the bathroom. Like you can't do that.
Well, you can't rent it out with any cameras. I mean, obviously, you know, you can't like say, oh, for security, I'm going to monitor the living room. You can't do that.
But what if your house does have like security cameras?
Well, hope that that it doesn't, because that would be invasion of privacy.
I guess
that's not legal to do.
So people, you just have to like disarm the security cameras?
No, I mean, you don't put security cameras in there in the first place, like inside the house. You know, I mean, I don't see how you can do that, renting it out to somebody else.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you do it for yourself, that's
maybe
fine.
You alert them. Yeah. Or like you have to disclose that there are cameras there.
I wouldn't move in, would you?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, because if I was going to stay at a big like home that had six bedrooms or whatever, and they had a security camera because, you know, it was part of their alarm system or whatever,
right?
I'd maybe feel even safer.
But you wouldn't be able to walk around naked. You couldn't do anything.
I probably wouldn't also walk around naked if I was staying in a house with six bedrooms and like other people.
Okay, well, what if there weren't any other people? That's what I'm saying. If you just had like your own apartment and stuff, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's illegal to do. Boy, I wouldn't rent a room from you. You're okay with the cameras.
Well,
you would think it's okay.
I don't know. I like to be safe at this point. I'm scared of everything right now. There have been shootings, like drive-by shootings lately.
Really? Here
in
LA?
Yeah, and I always thought I was safe in my car. I'm like, once I'm in my car, I'm safe and like no one can get me. But no, Someone can drive up and shoot you.
Yeah. This has happened here in LA?
Yeah.
Wow. Every once in a while, there's a wave of these things. You
yeah,
know?
This past week. Last week, my old boss's brother was shot at in his car and like shot at in the head by a drive-by shooting at a stoplight. And he lived. They tried to shoot him twice because they like saw that he was still driving and they drove up even closer to shoot at him.
Right.
And they didn't see that he lived. He went to the hospital and like walked out the next day. But he has like a shot like skimmed his head.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then apparently the other day in Hollywood on Sunset and Garner, which is like not that far from me, some guy in a Bentley, or no, a Rolls Royce, was shot at by a guy on a bike.
Wow.
Yeah. Lived also.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder, is this like road rage or what? What's
no,
going on
the first one I think was in a bad area and it was like a gang related thing. They had to probably kill someone to get in the gang. And then the other one was, they don't know. But I would feel a lot better if I knew that it was like premeditated. So then I'd be like, well, they're looking for someone specific.
Right,
it's not
exactly.
ever going to be me because I didn't do anything to anyone. But like, you just don't know until you hear what the results are.
Right.
But I'm terrified now. I'm like running into my car and driving away and like at stoplights looking around.
No, don't live like that. I mean, that's not a good life to live.
I know, but
yeah,
it's scary.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I mean, if we start thinking of all the scary things, we're not going to be able to lead any lives at all.
I'm just going to stay home and do yoga in my living room.
I'd be thinking about earthquakes all the time. You know?
Oh, I don't even care about that.
That scares me. You don't care about that?
Natural disasters I'm less concerned with than people and their choices.
Really?
Yeah, and their automatic weapons.
Okay, well, you must have not been here through a big earthquake yet.
No, I have, and I've been sleeping or, like, driving, and I didn't notice it.
Right.
So it hasn't really affected me. I've lived through hurricanes, too. That's a lot worse.
That's true, yeah. Well, maybe worse. I don't know.
It's relative.
At least you can get away from them beforehand.
You can. They do tell you when they're coming.
Right.
However, I was there during them. I heard them throughout the night. The power went out.
That's
you're
pretty
stuck
scary,
with no
huh?
food. And you have to bathe in, like, a bottle of water.
God.
I lived through Hurricane Andrew.
Really?
So.
Wow. That was devastating, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't so bad for like my house, but for other people around, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, I know. I know. Wow. Pretty interesting stuff. But yeah, that's security, you know. I mean, but obviously this guy wasn't using it for security, I'm sure.
No, definitely not.
People are just like to watch women, I guess, in their privacy. Wow. I'm telling you, some men are just like such perverts. You know, it's like you wonder where it comes from. You know, what is this? I mean, what in your childhood is prompting you now to do crazy things like this? You know, I mean, you know you're going to get caught. I mean, who's crazy to think they wouldn't?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Yeah. Just one final last thing to really depress you in the morning is this woman, I guess, slashed her children's throat.
Yeah, I had that open too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
It
she
is.
She said it was postpartum depression and she was quieting them for her husband.
Oh, yeah?
All three kids.
Oh, they were like screaming or something?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
But then she called 911. So at least, oh no, yeah. She said that they needed medical attention because they were crying.
Right. But they didn't die, right?
No.
They're not saying that they died.
No.
They underwent surgery. They're in stable condition. Wow. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a two-year-old and two twins 6 months old.
No. Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. My God.
You know, I mean, people, again, I mean, I don't understand this. You know, what, you know, I mean, these are like parents, you know. I mean, is there like a bigger bond between a mother and her child? You know, I mean, how does this happen?
I have no idea. That's why I still think that when somebody finds out they're pregnant or something prior to being pregnant, they should go through some mental test.
Right.
Some people are just not fit to be parents.
Right. I know. But you would make it into a very oppressed society if you started doing that. You know, so they can't.
Well, either fix the health system and like help people with mental health, or fix that. I don't know what.
Right,
there are your options.
But that's the thing, is that you don't always know that they have mental health issues.
That's why they should test.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe they'll
test for everything.
Yeah.
You have a physical that tells you if you have like likelihood of having cancer and all these other things. Right. Why not mental issues?
Right. Okay. Well, they wouldn't tell you not to have kids if you had cancer.
No.
Yeah.
But that's because you're not going to kill them when you have cancer. But if you have mental issues, who knows, you might snap and slit your kids' throats.
Oh, God.
Just saying.
All right. Well, enough for this for one morning. I mean, this is what we have to get up to every morning, you know?
Didn't ruin my
Depressing
day.
Depressing news, yeah. But we'll try to stay on the positive note.
Yes.
We're going to bring in our guest now. We have Mr. Michael Geyer in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for sitting through this. I know you felt you had things to say and stuff while we were talking. Is there anything you wanted to comment on what we said that you were just dying to say?
No. No. You know, it's hard not laughing because sometimes things are funny and I'm sitting here trying to laugh quietly.
Yeah. It's okay. We said we have a guest here, so that's fine.
You're allowed to laugh.
Okay, yeah, good.
Definitely.
I'm free to be me now.
Yeah.
There you go. Welcome to the show. I mean, you seem like a cool guy and everything, so I'm sure we can. You're going to keep us on the positive side here.
Oh, yes, you know? Yes, yes. Life is about being positive.
Great. So tell us what it is that you do, Michael.
Boy, a lot of different things, but I've got a production company called Silver Duff Productions, and the film division is Silver Duff Films, and we produce a lot of different projects. And I've got a current project that we're doing. It's a feature film called Wounded Warriors. Uh-huh. And it's woundedwarriorsmovie.com. And it's going to be a film that honors our military. But my past is all entertainment. I made a living as an entertainer most of my life and got into filming and producing and directing about 7 years ago. And now I do both, you know, so
wow.
I love it. It's just the entertainment industry. It's fun in front of the camera, as you know, yeah, and behind the camera.
Wow. Very cool. So were you born here in L.A.?
San Diego.
Oh, really? So not too far from here.
No, born and raised, Southern California boy. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you grew up there in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Did you have a nice childhood there? I mean, was it cool?
I had a great childhood. Yeah, I had a great family, great parents. The city is one of the best in the world.
Yeah, that's true. You know? I always ask that question because sometimes you can open up a can of worms with like, no, my childhood sucked, you know?
Yeah, why did you bring it up?
Yeah, so now there's a whole lot of questions you can ask about that.
I was lucky. I was one of the fortunate ones who had a fabulous upbringing. I have no complaints.
Very
great
cool.
Parents, love them to death to this day, and they're still alive, which is great. And so, yeah, very, very fortunate.
Amazing. And so did you go to school there? Did you go to college at all?
No, I went straight into entertaining.
Entertainment. Yeah, the hell with college, man.
Yeah, I was like, I don't need it. I'm going to be an actor. So, you know, at 17, I got my first professional job, and I went on performing all over the world from that point on.
Really? So that came from you, right? Wanting to be an actor. It's not like your parents directed
you to that? Not my parents. I'm not quite sure where I got it from, but I started at 14 in school.
Really?
And then San Diego has a city-funded program called San Diego Junior Theater, and they train up the young in the entertainment industry. And they have a beautiful, large theater. And we, from the age of 14 on, I started doing shows at that theater, starting off in the chorus, working up to doing the leads at 17. And then I got my first professional job after San Diego Junior Theater and just left and started performing from that point on.
Wow, very cool. Did you have like feelings about what you wanted to do early on in your life, Jen?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, you couldn't stop me.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, no, I was interviewing it, right? Fake people, like the heir, my housekeeper, my nanny, anybody that would talk to me, really, and I would do interviews with them.
Wow.
That's great.
Oh yeah, I was like nonstop talking.
Whoa.
My parents like couldn't. They just put me in theater right away, and then we did family community theater, all of us.
Yeah.
Since I'm an only child, and they're like, "Well, we have to hang out with you, so we'll do it too."
So they hadn't done it before?
No.
Oh wow!
And so we, as a family, did like several plays back to back with this community theater, and then I did it in like high school. I was in the magnet program, and then college, and then here.
Oh wow!
That's great.
Yeah, so,
but
when
but,
you know, you know.
As an interviewer, aren't you supposed to talk less rather than more? You know, when you're
are
the
you trying
interviewer,
to tell me
right? Well, no, because you were saying, no, you were saying that you talked a lot. Not that I'm saying you are.
Yeah, I mean, I just wasn't shy.
Yeah.
And also, I think that's good because sometimes people that you interview don't know what to say.
Exactly. So you got to
fill the space.
You are right. There are times when there are, I get upset watching some of these stars who are, you know, I can't remember who they are right now, but the guest is trying to say something.
Right.
And the host, who's a comedian, whether it's Jay Leno or David Letterman or somebody, one of those big guys, they're constantly jumping in. I'm like, let them finish. I want to hear them finish what they were saying. What they were saying is more important than you trying to be funny right now.
Right.
Shut up. You know, but sometimes you get a guest who doesn't talk and you have to fill the space and you better be quick on your feet to make sure you can keep things moving.
Yeah.
So she's right.
Yeah, for sure. So what was your first job? You said you got your first job at 17.
Yeah, it was performing in a group called The Bright Side. Uh-huh. And it was a singing and dancing group. And we just toured all over the country performing. And we had a live band and then a few of us that were the singers and the dancers. And we did all this corporate stuff.
You know,
in Vegas, in Palm Springs, in San Diego, up to Washington, the Puyallup State Fair.
Wow. So you're a singer, too, in addition to being an actor? And
yeah.
Did you sing in the movie?
Most of my life it was doing Broadway shows and just performing in different parts of the world as a singer, dancer. I had an act that I booked out on cruise ships, you know. So between doing shows, the musical theater things, and my own shows, and
yeah,
that's what I mostly did back then.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about entertainment. There's so many different things you can do, you know.
Which is your favorite?
You know, it's hard. I don't have a favorite. Right now I'm only doing working as an actor in television and film. I miss the theater. I miss the live mm-hmm. audience and the theater. But when I'm doing a lot of that, I miss doing film and television because they're so different, but it's part of what we do, so it's all fun, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Now when someone decides to be an actor like you, do you consciously think I want to go into movies or I want to go into theater, or are you just pretty much open to anything?
I think it depends on your talents. What you're able to do. Because of junior theater, they kind of trained us to be well-balanced. So I was a dancer. You know, I'm a tap dancer as well, but as well as musical theater. I got to tap dance with Gregory Hines in the feature film Tap. I don't know if you know who Gregory
is.
But
yeah.
Okay. Because he died young. He was like 49 or 50. But I worked with him for a week. Amazing guy. Loved Gregory Hines. So down to earth. Such a great guy. But I was a dancer, and I happened to be a singer, and they taught us acting. And then I got into hosting, and so I just well-balanced. And the only reason I made a living for so long was because there were so many different things that I could do.
Right.
Sometimes I was hired just as an actor. Sometimes I was just a dancer. Sometimes I was a host. I had a show that I did in the Midwest interviewing celebrity guests and things that aired in three states. So I was a host for a while. I sang in Branson, Missouri for 5 years with the Lawrence Welk show, which I don't know if you guys are old enough to know who they are.
Yeah, Lawrence Welk is pretty old, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, their fans are the older generation.
Right.
But back when the Lawrence Welk show was on TV, it was the most popular show in the country.
Really?
And to this day, PBS still reruns their shows, and it's their most watched show on PBS because there are so many fans that love the Lawrence Welk show. So all the original TV stars came to Branson, Missouri. They opened up a 2,500-seat theater, 20-piece orchestra, and then they brought a few of us in that were the young new stars, and then we performed there with all the original stars, and they were so talented.
Wow.
But so anyway, being able to do a lot of different things allowed me to keep working.
Right.
So because I do a lot of teaching and coaching, and when I do with actors coming into the business, it's one of the things I teach them is you've got to be as well-rounded as possible because it gives you a better opportunity to get work. If you're only focused on one thing and you can't get a job in that one thing, that limits your availability to get work.
It really does. You know, you have to brand yourself. You have to make yourself useful.
As marketable as possible, yeah.
Yeah, you know. Well, that's very cool. So at what point did you decide to move to L.A.?
I think I came to L.A. when I was about, let me think here. I think it was 26, 25 or 26.
I see. So you worked for a while in San Diego.
Yeah,
right?
San Diego and different traveling. Parts of the country. Yeah, because I'd get hired for like summer stock. I'd go and do a summer of shows and then I'd come back. And
oh, wow. So you got to travel as well and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were your parents okay with that? I mean, by then you were an adult already, so.
Yeah, my parents were great. They're, again, not being from the entertainment industry, I was fortunate that no matter what I did, they were so supportive. They didn't require me to go to college and get an education. Yeah. This is what I loved. And so they're always very supportive and always there, you know, when I was performing. So
right. I know. I mean, I went to college, you know, my brother never did. He's got a lot more money than I do, you know. So the thing is this, you know, I'm here to say college is overrated, you know. I mean, on the one hand, I love to study and I recommend it for everybody. But don't think it's going to like necessarily make you rich or get you a job for sure, you know. I mean, and we've talked about this. People go to college, they get out, there's no work for them.
Yeah.
You know, so you're stuck with all these student loans. You don't
Tell
have anywhere
it.
To go. Yeah.
You know firsthand.
I really wanted to go to Santa Monica Community College, and my parents said, no, you're going to a four-year college. Private loans later.
Yeah.
It's real fun.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard.
You should have seen your face. When you
I can feel it.
That burden.
Oh, it is. I wake up every morning, Sam, and I'm like, oh, paying student loans. That's how I start.
Fun, huh?
No, I don't start my day like that.
My brother's in his early 40s, and he still has, I won't even say the amount he owes, but a lot of money he owes from his student loans.
Really? Wow. So it grabs you like your whole life, huh?
It could, yeah. I don't know why.
Oh, I'll tell you. I have $120,000 still.
Yeah.
And I've already paid
$100,000. You have?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of the interest, it just keeps on accruing.
Exactly. To me, something has to be done about that. That's
I have private loans. Now they do something with federal where they consolidate your loans and like wipe it out or whatever. But I unfortunately have private loans and there's nothing for me to do.
And he can't either.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to you guys. There should be something for you regardless.
Yeah. No. I can't imagine investing so much money in college. You know, I mean, how are you ever going to recover that money?
Oh, I have no idea. Thank you, education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, brought me here.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, when you become a big star.
Right.
You know, and, I like to know who I'm going to be talking with. So I looked at who you both were. And, you know, you're doing the right thing because you're out there. You're doing so many different projects.
Yeah.
And you've got your websites and your blog and your internet shows and all that stuff. So that's all great stuff, which is what you have to do as an entertainer. So I was impressed to see that because so many entertainers sit and wait for the phone to ring.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Jenna's out there making things happen.
Right. I know. It just doesn't happen. Things don't fall in your lap, you know.
And, exactly.
People try to think of the one story where somebody got discovered or something.
Right.
And, yeah, that's going to be me. And they don't realize they come here. We have 4 million people in this town. Everybody's trying to get the same parts and it just doesn't work that way.
No.
You know. Very cool. So so I'm very impressed that it worked out for you early on, you know, and that you pursued it. You obviously didn't sit back and wait for it to come to you.
No.
Went and pursued this.
Yeah, I've always been that way. I never waited for anything to come to me. I always go out and get it. And like I said earlier, Jen's doing the same thing, and that's the way I think most successful people are. They go out there and they conquer the world. They open up opportunities and open up doors and, you know, make things happen. And that's what you have to do in life, whether it's entertainment or otherwise.
Right.
And so thankfully I had that in my personality. So
great.
Yeah.
So then you moved to LA and what did you do at that point? The company is your company?
Yes, Silver Dove Films.
It is. Silver Dove Films is your company.
Yes.
When did you start the company?
That was about 6 or 7 years ago. I forget the exact year, but I started it to produce corporate videos. So we do a lot of TV commercials, internet videos, biographies, training videos, corporate stuff. And then 3 years ago, I started the film division to start producing films. And and I've got a film coming out this year called RZ9 that I produced. It'll be out soon, but it's a fabulous action film, sci-fi, futuristic. Turned out so well, great movie. And then our current project, of course, is one of the reasons I'm here today is to talk about Wounded Warriors, which is a film that's going to honor our military. So that's our next project that we're working on.
Right. And so you started with video and stuff, what, to like pay the bills or because you really wanted to? I mean, did it interest you as much as films do?
You know, boy.
This corporate stuff can be dry, right?
I enjoy it because, you know, it's so creative. You know?
Really?
And they call me in with an idea, and, you know, our company, we get to create you know, whatever it's going to be, whether it's writing the scripts. And it's fun. I love directing. I mean, I've always been a director and producer, but in the past, I was, you know, directing or producing live shows.
Right.
You know, I'd rent a theater and bring in a bunch of stars and, you know, produce all this advertising and produce a big show for the weekend, you know, and make money doing that. So I've always been producing as well. I just decided to try the camera thing. So I bought all this equipment. Uh-huh. Spent thousands of dollars, and I didn't know how to use it.
Really?
And so I hired this college kid, and I just said, you know, you got a week, so teach me how to use all this stuff. And, you know, he did. So I just started doing my own stuff by myself with a one-man band, you know, just to have something else to do and see what would happen with this particular company. Because I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always started companies.
Yeah.
And so I thought I'd give this one a shot as well. As I was still performing and things, and he taught me. I started getting work and doing that and found I loved it. And then it just grew, you know, to where now, you know, we have jobs where I have up to 24 people that are just there, you know, for the project or the TV commercial or whatever it is that we're doing. And I've got DPs and, you know, great sound people and great editors. And now I just kind of oversee the whole process. And it's just built, you know, over the years and or grown, I should say. And then doing the films, I just love directing and producing.
What is RZ9 about?
It's a RZ9. There are guys that are out in the field. There's RZ7, RZ8, RZ9. They're the military guys. And the world is in chaos. And there are the terrorists, which technically could be the good guys once you see the film.
Really?
And the military guys who look like the good guys in the beginning could be actually the bad guys. You know, but they're trying to stop the terrorists or those that are trying to not do what the government wants them to do. And so it's just a big, you know, action film. Military commander, Commander Smith is telling his guys where to go and who to stop. And so it's just action all the way through. But it's futuristic. So there's spacecraft, not as though it's UFO spacecraft, but just we've advanced so far. You've got these really cool looking ships and spacecrafts that come in. And, and their uniforms are all, it's hard to describe. It's fabulous, though.
But I mean, but it sounds like a lot of effects and stuff, too,
a lot
right?
Of effects, a lot of animation. We hired a great special effects guy, and he did a fabulous job creating all these amazing, you know, like I said, spacecrafts or futuristic things that would land. And I don't even know how he does what he did. Wow. You know, we'd have these spacecrafts come in, and as it's coming down, you see all this dirt and dust coming up, and it doesn't look fake. It looks like a, you know, $100 million movie.
Right.
And we didn't have $100 million or anything close to it, you know. So
that's
our special effects guy was amazing.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. You know, I mean, things have become a lot more affordable now, so people can do things that big studios do. I can tell you that in 1990, I mean, we're talking like 25 years ago, I started a computer animation company, and I was doing also mostly corporate stuff, but I would do like animation, like 3D animation like you see in movies and on TV, and like build a product on the computer and make it fly and show it from different directions and stuff. I did get some film project as well. Obviously, back then it wasn't as advanced as it is today, because like you said, it looks real. It doesn't look fake. At that time, we were trying to be as real as possible, but you could still tell, you know. So that's why I love this stuff, you know, and I'm amazed that you were able to get it affordably, that you could do a relatively low-budget movie, right? Can you reveal what kind of budgets you have for things like that?
Well, I've been told, because I was brought in as a producer. So Silver Dove Films, my company, didn't produce it. I, Michael Geyer, was brought in to produce it. And it was made for under $1 million, is what I can say.
Wow. Well, that's very cool. You know, I mean, that's amazing. And that's why I think technology has empowered everybody, including filmmakers, because you can do so much more.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of things you can do yourself because all the equipment and all the software is out there. And, you know I've done a lot of things myself. I still do, you know, rather than get other people to do it for you, because you're empowered to do it. You know, So that's a fictional movie, obviously, right? Who wrote the story for that one? For that film,
it was. I have to think. I'm going to blank.
It's okay. We won't put you on the spot.
But that film was about military.
Yes.
Is that what inspired you to do another film about military?
No, it actually it wasn't. What inspired me? There's a great video that a guy named Roger Stevens wrote a song called "Wounded Warrior." And he sent me the video link. It was performed by a country star named Billy Dean. And I hadn't heard of Billy Dean, but he's won a lot of awards, and he's, I guess, very big in the country world. But Billy, I saw the video, and it was outstanding. The song was amazing. The message was amazing. And the video production of what they produced was amazing. And Roger was trying to find somebody who'd be interested in producing a movie that would feature his song. So we talked, and I just happened to be looking for my next project. And I get people sending me scripts and everything every week, and, you know, most of them I'm just not interested in. But I've always been a huge fan of our military and wanting to honor them. And after seeing this video, which was so heartfelt and, you know, brought you to tears and, you know, so patriotic and it was amazing, I was like, you know what, let's do this. So I agreed to produce it and then also feature his song in the movie somewhere. His song has to do with Vietnam veterans and our military. And I didn't want to do a Vietnam movie only because it's so expensive to do something, a period piece.
Right.
So we're doing a film that is based in current times, follows an Afghanistan, a military war vet. But his father was a Vietnam veteran. And his father came back from Vietnam and suffered from PTSD. And then the son, after he goes to Afghanistan, he also suffers with PTSD. And so because of the father and his issues coming back from Vietnam, the son and he don't have the best relationship. And so the movie's going to kind of follow their lives and the reconciliation between father and son. And the son, of course, never understanding his dad until he went and experienced war himself firsthand. Now he has a better understanding of why his dad came back and was the man he was after war. And so there's going to be, you know, we're going to really focus on PTSD in the sense that we want to educate Americans on just how serious the problem is and what these poor men and women that have served our country, what they're suffering with every day here back at home. And it's a story that needs to be told.
Yeah.
Have you seen American Sniper?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Loved that movie.
I didn't know what was going to happen at the end because I didn't know his story.
Yeah, that's sad.
And somebody had actually said to me, like, mid-watching it, like, oh, has he died yet? And I was like, what?
What? Smack him.
Yeah, what the hell? That gives away the whole movie.
I was like, now I'm just waiting for him to die at some point, not knowing when it's going to happen, why it's going to happen, because I thought he was already back from the war, so how could he possibly
die?
He's
exactly.
here.
Yeah, wow.
So,
and if your listeners didn't know, they're mad at us now.
Yeah, exactly.
Read the news, listeners.
I know, I haven't even seen it yet. Don't
you have
watch the trailer.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to see real stories based on that, you know, as more like documentary style, I think is so fascinating because American Sniper opened up our eyes to that happening more recently.
Exactly.
And wow.
And by the time we get this film produced and out, it'll probably be a couple of years. And so, you know, hopefully there won't be a Sniper movie out at the same time we're coming out. We're hoping to release it theatrically. That's the goal, is to put this one in theaters. And we're going to have a lot of real life based on actual stories of people who have suffered from PTSD. We're going to be doing Vietnam War reenactments and Afghanistan War reenactments, and they're all going to be based on actual stories that people have gone through. I've got a consultant from the Vietnam War name that's going to be part of the film. I'm blanking. Tom Mateo. I'm blanking on everyone's name today.
Okay.
Tom Mateo, and he's a 6-time Purple Heart recipient, and the man is amazing. And he is our consultant for the Vietnam War, and he's writing a book, and he's got some amazing stories of battles that took place in Vietnam while he was there. And so we're going to be using some of those and maybe some others. And so we're going to try to put as much stories from people we're interviewing, real-life stories of what people are going through, whether it's the wives here at home who are the wives of the military or the husbands of the wives who are fighting and coming back, whatever. We're going to put those real-life stories in the script. So as much of the script as possible is going to be based on real-life stories.
Right.
And it's going to be very heartfelt, like Sniper was. It's going to be a lot of personal and just seeing what
but it is a fictional movie. It's not a documentary. Or
correct.
Anything.
No. Right. It'll be just like Sniper in the sense that it's a regular feature film.
Right.
But it's not based on a person's life.
Right.
But we'll have stories incorporated from many people's lives so that it's all based on truth.
Sounds good. So this takes place in where? In Afghanistan? Is that where the character's stationed?
Yes, exactly. The main character's stationed in Afghanistan.
Right. Now, for those of you who don't know PTSD, that's post-traumatic shock
stress
disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm. PTSD disorder, yeah.
Okay, they had the shock shell thing from World War One. I'm mixing these things. But, and this, it's very prevailing, right? I mean, it's like it's happening a lot for people who are suffering from a lot of stress and a lot of problems after coming back from war.
Yeah, it's the things they see, and they're just trying to live each minute of the day, just trying to get back to the base. And even there at the base, many times it's not safe, as we've heard. There have been killings there, and you know, just trying to get home to their family and friends, and the amount of stress and pressure they are in and under, you know, overseas in the Afghanistan or Iraqi war are tremendous. And you know, when they suffer from PTSD, I've heard different people talk about it who've suffered from it. They don't sleep at night. They're lucky to get an hour of sleep.
Wow.
I had one guy in tears saying, you know, I was screaming out to God, begging him to let me sleep, because there's just so much going on. You know, they can't sleep with their wives because in the same bed, you know, because many times they'll wake up strangling, you know, because right. they're trying to, in their dreams or whatever they're reliving, they're fighting back to protect themselves, and whoever's next to them, their wife, spouse, is getting attacked, so they have to sleep in separate rooms. You can't even be in the same bed as your wife, and just the slightest thing, as you've heard before, gunfire. I'm sorry, like a car backfiring or a loud noise can just set them off, and they're just always on guard and just an emotional mess. And,
right.
and then not getting sleep, and then that happening day after day after day, they're living in hell, and it's very sad.
And as we saw in Sniper, well, you didn't see it yet, but the need to go back.
Yes.
Because feeling like you're not being helpful back here, like you're off from duty, but at the same time, there are people that are still fighting the same war you were fighting, and you have a need to go back and help.
And you know, the other thing when I watched Sniper, that along with what you're saying here, that was amazing to me is you can imagine, as we saw in Sniper, he's away in this war, which is a completely different world than life. And then he comes back home to all of us living our Disneyland life.
It's like trivial.
It's like trivial, yeah. How foreign, and you know, and he's got his friends over there still fighting and dying. He's like, his feeling is, why am I here in this trivial Disneyland world right now when I should be back there helping my guys stay alive?
Wow.
You know, and yeah. You can see why these military guys have that guilt, and most of them do. They have to get back, and their wives and their families don't understand. You're home. Relax. We want to see you. And they're like, I'm wasting my time here. My guys are dying over there, and you guys want to play Disneyland here.
It just changes the perspective, I think, of the person where they don't fit in anywhere anymore.
Right.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. You know, and my theory also is that, you know, when you join the military and you go to basic training and stuff, you know, and they make you into a soldier, I think they deconstruct you and rebuild you as a soldier, as a fighting machine.
Yes.
And then you come back to the real world as a fighting machine and you don't fit in because you don't need all these skills here in everyday life. And I think you also, like you said, you know, you see death, you see a lot of horrible stuff. And how do you go back to living your life normally like you did before?
And how about the guys who are over there being given all this responsibility and using millions of dollars worth of equipment and being experts at what they do and making a difference in life, and then coming home and they can't get hired to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and they feel useless. You know, I had so much that I could do there, and here nobody even wants me. I can't do anything here.
Yeah.
I can't make a living.
Right.
That's awful.
It is. It is. Wow. So, that's terrible to want to go back to that kind of a situation that has made them so stressed out and everything. But like you said, you know, I think they come back here, they don't find a purpose anymore, right? They felt they were, I mean, I can see how as a soldier away overseas or in any war, you feel you're doing something worthwhile, you know, and you have a purpose. Mm. And then you leave that and you come back to, like you said, the Disneyland life, and you go, well, where do I fit in all
right.
this, you know?
Are you going to touch on, like, veterans, like, disability, I don't know, treatment or, like, hospitals and the system here?
Boy, you know, I have a veteran who talked to me about that in Texas because, you know, from what he was saying and others have said, they're very let down by the treatment and the what they're not getting that they need here in the United States. I don't know who exactly is to blame for that, but I'm assuming the government, since they're responsible for our military. But, you know, so I started thinking that we might. I'm actually meeting with a screenwriter after our interview today. He doesn't know it yet, but I'm offering him the job. This guy's amazing. He's got tremendous experiences writing as a screenwriter. He's been around forever, and he's amazing. So we're meeting, but it's one of the things I'm talking about because that's maybe, you know, but then we can get a lot of, you know, That's a whole other topic.
Right. And like, it doesn't want to, you don't want to make it like propaganda.
Exactly.
Also.
I don't want to open up a can of worms to where all of a sudden they're doing everything they can to make sure we don't get this film produced. Right. You know, I want
it. Well, it could be like The Interview, and then you'll release it and it'll have all the publicity in the world surrounding it.
Exactly. It'll do well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But so I don't know, but you know, we may touch on it if we do. I do want to talk about the, in the film, they have dogs that really help men with PTSD.
I used to date somebody that trained them.
Oh,
that
you
would
did.
Train dogs for the Wounded Warriors Project.
Wow. Yeah. So I think we want to touch on that as well, because I think that's fabulous. I want people to know about that. Uh-huh. One, that you can be a volunteer to train these animals because they are so helpful for these men and women that are suffering with PTSD.
Yeah.
So I do want to touch on that as well. But there are so many directions that we could go. And so we've got to kind of dial it in with the screenplay writer. But it's going to be I want it to be action-packed, fast-moving, very emotional, personal story, though. So it's going to have a lot of great elements.
Wow, and, sounds very cool. So I go on the website. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Michael Geyer. He's the producer of the movie Wounded Warriors. And you guys are working on it now, and you... forecast what, in a year or two it'll be done?
So what we're doing, we just started raising the funds for the film. Now here's what we would normally do. Normally we would raise the funds through investors. And investors would then get 50% of the net profits as the film makes money.
Right.
And so what we decided to do something different, you know, we'll see how this works, is we want to raise the money through people, donations. The American people, the American citizens, because I think it's going to be great to say that the only reason this film got produced was because of the love and support for our military from Americans all over the country. And then instead of that 50% that would normally go to investors, we're going to donate that money to nonprofit organizations that benefit veterans. Because investors don't need to be paid. They're not there. It came from...
Yeah.
The people who love our military. So that money is going to go to support the military. So as long as the movie is making money, it's going to be generating income for these organizations.
That's amazing. That's a great way to work it out, you know.
It's never been done before like that. You know,
right.
People do fundraisers for films, but they usually keep all the profit.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, when we first got into this with Roger and the others I talked to, I said, you know, if we're going to do it through donations, we cannot keep the profit because 100% of the profit, that's not right. That money would normally go to investors. That money now needs to go to the people and because they donated
to
veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the right thing to do. So
right. And you give them a good motive to donate, you know, because they know they're helping out, actually.
Yeah, it's not just for the movie itself.
Right.
They're also, you know, because a lot of people will donate to a movie to see it get made. But we have a double bonus. It's going to get made, and it's going to generate income that's going to benefit veterans. So,
are you doing this through like a Kickstarter? Or?
Well, not yet. We're doing it through the website only because I asked my attorney. They charge 8% to 12%, depending upon who you go with and how you do it. And I said, do I have to go through Kickstarter? Because if I do, you know, we're going to lose 8%. I'd rather do it through PayPal. And PayPal, you know, they notify the IRS, and it's all legal because they all know what money's being earned, and we're accountable for it. But you don't have to go through a Kickstarter campaign, you know,
right.
Or GoFundMe, or we might at some point if we have to. I'm trying to avoid that because I don't want to waste the 8%. I'd rather that go into our film's budget.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It does make a lot of sense. If you guys want to donate, go to a website called WoundedWarriorsMovie.com, and there's a button to donate. You can get a lot of information on the movie, Wounded Warriors. There's a lot of information on the website, actually. And I did want to bring up in the last few minutes we have the fact of suicide by troops that return home. Are you going to touch on that in the movie as well?
Yes. The main guy who's, again, an Afghanistan vet, he's a husband and he's got a newborn, a child. And this part is based, again, on a true story of somebody we talked to that he went through this exact same thing. His father came back from war and was a Vietnam vet, just like our storyline. And we had our storyline before I even heard this guy's story. When I heard his story, I'm like, that's our movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get him to give me more details so we can kind of make it more based on his life, because his father was a Vietnam vet, came back, was very abusive, as you know, with him as a child. And then now that this child grew up and is now a man, he went to the Afghan war, came back. He now has a child with PTSD. He has PTSD. He's so afraid he's going to do what his father did but he's going to do it to his child, that he became suicidal.
Really?
He actually tried to kill himself. I think he said two times is what it was. I don't know what he tried to do, but he didn't accomplish it. But nonetheless, he was suicidal because he was so afraid. I don't want to be what my dad was to my mom and my child, to me. And I don't want to be that person. So I'd rather take myself out to help them avoid the pain of what I am now. With struggling with PTSD.
Wow.
So we may include that part in the film as well.
Wow. You can totally, you can imagine the mental, chaos
anguish.
They have. Yeah, the anguish.
Is there a cure
mind.
At all for this? I mean, I know there's therapy, but, how successful is that?
I don't know. I want to end the film with something positive.
Yeah.
So I want to give hope, and we're going to research that and find out just what can happen and how these guys and men and women can be helped. Because that's an important aspect as well. I don't want to have the bad story. I want to have there is hope, because at the end, this guy is going to find a solution that's going to be beneficial for him and his wife, to where he can have a happy family and he doesn't have to worry about killing himself.
Yeah.
Wow. Because that's a major problem, and I'm so empathetic to all those troops that come back. They feel they don't fit in, like for all the reasons we talked about. And maybe they can't connect. Maybe they don't even have a wife. They can't connect with a woman or whatever it is. And then there's nothing left. And these great, great people, great Americans, are killing themselves for what they sacrificed for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think there needs to be a lot of awareness of what's going on.
Yeah.
And people need to really address this and really reeducate the soldiers that come back, let them, they need to readjust. I mean, there's no question about it. Mm-hmm. You spend months, years in the desert with people that want to murder you and slaughter you. Mm-hmm. And like you said, so they can't go to sleep. All these images in their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing, if people go to the website, we have a promo video we just put up a week ago, because we're just starting to get the word out about the film. It's a promo video, and we have a little war sequence that we did. A little battle scene, but it's really, really cool, really intense. And then I've got 10 veterans who, in the video, that just talk about the project and what we're doing. And they're from different branches. Some are Vietnam War vets. I've got men, women, all colors and races, all there just talking about what we're doing with the film and how people can help us get this thing made to benefit and honor our military.
Right, right. Yeah, I think we take them for granted. I don't think we discuss our soldiers enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I salute you for making this film. I mean, I think any contribution to that topic, to that issue, is very important. It's got social value to it.
Yeah.
So guys, go ahead and donate. Go to woundedwarriorsmovie.com. You can find a lot of information. Donate anything. I'm sure it's going to help for you to achieve your goals and actually create the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're putting your life into it, because movies are not like simple things you can do like in a couple of weeks,
Yeah, people don't realize all the work that goes into a film.
Yeah, I know. But at least you're doing what you love, and that's important.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. And just tell us quickly, Silver Dove Films, you guys actually produce stuff for other people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually do that as well. If they have the funds, whether it's a short film, whether it's a feature film, and they want us to produce it, then they can hire us as the production company that produces their films.
Wow.
And the website for Silver Dove Films is silverdovefilms.com.
Sounds good. And can people find out more about you on those websites, or do you have
I've also
your own?
Got michaelgeier.com, and okay. Last name is G-I-E-R,
okay.
michaelgeier.com. And that it's just the website for me as an actor, as a director, as a producer, and as an acting coach. So it's the website for everything.
So people can connect with you through the website as well.
All three websites can connect with me.
Right. Awesome.
And we're on Facebook, of course, and Twitter, and
everywhere, huh?
Yeah.
how many people do you work with at Silver Dove?
In what way?
How many people are involved? I mean, is it like a big company? It's your company, right?
Yeah, it's my company, and most of the people that work for me are all independent contractors.
And I hire
them based on what we need. So sometimes it's a small crew, sometimes it's a very large crew, and so I hire based on what we need per production.
Right, that's a lot easier. You don't want to have to pay salaries and stuff.
No,
who wants that? Wow. So you plan on working on this, what, for the next couple of years or so?
Well, we hope to raise the money as soon as possible this year, and then hopefully be filming next year.
I see.
So the screenwriter's getting hired today, and then we're going to start working on the script, and then I'll have my line producer put together a budget, and then we'll have an idea of what we're going to need location-wise and everything else and start planning that for next year. But right now it's all about raising money. Right. And we've got people all over the country that are even doing local fundraisers, you know, and doing different things in their community. Yeah. So, you know, from different places all over the country and different, whether it's individual donating or somebody putting together a fundraiser of some sort or whatever they do, you know, money's just rolling in, and we'll get enough at some point to produce a film.
Great. And obviously you need a lot of patience for this. You see, that's why I could never get into this, because films take a while to do.
Yes.
Books the same way, you know, it takes a while to write. For me, I'm like a short distance runner, you know. Give me something quick, I can do it, you know, tops. But if I have to, like, think, oh, the movie's going to be done in 2 years, I mean, I can't even plan a vacation for 2 weeks from now, you know. I have to plan it, like, 2 days before,
funny.
You know. So, yeah, so it takes a certain personality, I think, to handle that kind of work as well, you know. And
I'm more like you, believe it or not, but I've learned to be able to do the other, because you have no choice.
Right,
if you're
going to
produce anything, it takes time. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You learn to deal.
Yeah. I know. All right. Michael Geyer, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
A wealth of information and very entertaining. And we wish you all the best with the film. I mean, I can't wait to see it.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and don't forget us minions when you become really big.
Yeah.
And you get the Oscar and everything.
I'll come back.
Yeah, exactly. Remember?
Holding my Oscar. I wish. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I forgot Sam and Jen. I got it from 20 years ago. All right. Well, Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.